And welcome back to Private Education, the Smart Sex and Relationships podcast. I'm Aislinn Keenan, at Aislinn M. Keenan on Instagram if you want to follow me. The M is not for Mariah, just in case anyone's unclear. There's a rumour going around that it is, but it isn't. My guest today is Melanie Murphy, and she is an author and an online content creator. And she uses kind of her YouTube channel to talk about topics like sexuality, women's rights, relationships, lots of different things. But those things specifically relate to, obviously, this podcast and the content that I produce. But she talks with such warmth and openness that appeals to over 600,000 subscribers, Melanie. What the hell?
No, it's mad.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, and I started it 6 years ago, so I guess it's been a kind of a slow grower. It's not like I woke up one night and the next morning I had all these people. So I feel like as time has gone by, I've gotten kind of more used to that.
Yeah.
But still, when I film a video, I don't really think about the amount of people. That's what helps me to be so candid on camera because they're not looking at me.
Yeah, so it's
a bit easier.
Yeah. You said in one of your videos, you were like, you know, I'm just talking to my camera. I know you're there. Like, I know, and you call them your online family, which is,
I always say internet family. Yeah. It's like kind of having this little space online. It's like an extension of yourself. I don't know. I have a lot of weird feelings about the internet at the moment, especially because I'm kind of coming into that phase of life where I'm thinking about having kids and all. And I've been thinking a lot about what we do, why we share stuff, all that kind of thing. But for me, the reason I started was because I was in college and I found all these people vlogging in their house, and this was way before anyone was doing it as a job.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was so weird and like interesting to be a fly on the wall and to just kind of almost, it has the sensation, the feeling that you're lying in bed chatting to a mate.
Yeah.
And you could kind of fulfill that while you're on public transport or you're in the bath or you're cleaning or you're cooking or anything like that. And I was just like, I want to have that effect that these people have on me. Do you know what I mean?
We went to the same university, I think. You went to DCU, right?
DCU, did it?
Oh, yeah. DCU too. What year did you graduate?
I think it was 2014, I think.
Okay, so I was 2009. So
before,
we weren't there at the same time.
Yeah, I did education and training. What did you do?
Journalism.
Okay.
Yeah. And I just, at the time, I remember, the reason I say this is because I remember at the time being told by one of my lecturers, everyone is going to have blogs in a few years, so start a blog. And so everyone in the class started a blog, and I did too. But at that time, I couldn't even explain to people what a blog was.
It was
so new and so kind of uncharted territory. Like, so I guess in 2014 that would have been true for vlogs and for YouTubers.
I think people didn't understand at first, and I was doing it while I was in DCU, and people like really gave me the dirty looks and all that kind of stuff when I'd bring it up, because they're like, what are you doing? Do you know, because sometimes I would, you know, bring a camera into college and you know, in fairness, at the time I was not being myself online at all. Like I was speaking in a different voice, I was changing my accent because I was really self-conscious of my accent, and like I didn't know what I was doing. I was kind of emulating the people I was watching.
Yeah.
So I was just filming shite, like just anything. And I wasn't really talking about stuff that I was all that interested in. I was talking about a lot of safe things at the time, because that's all I saw girls doing at the time, like other women. And but I was getting a lot of like kind of, oh, who does she think she is kind of thing. And then
been so unusual to be going around with a camera then.
It was.
Like, it's not anymore.
I only had a few hundred subscribers as well when it started. So they were kind of just looking at me like I was mad. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And then I remember when it started taking off, I was in my final year.
Right.
And like I was getting like different newspapers and stuff were doing media coverage of me. And I went on like this Channel 4 show. And then people were like, being really up my arse, and all of a sudden and then they were really interested, and it made me kind of cut off a lot from a lot of people. It's a very weird experience. So it is. But look, sure, it's brought me to like a place where that I love, and I love what I'm doing now and I'm writing, and it's
you're
very
doing
interesting.
So much. So you've written a non-fiction book, then you've written, your fiction book is called If Only.
It's called If Only.
Like, you've done so much in such, like, in such a relatively short amount of time.
My first book was on the was featured on the Leaving Cert like this year. It was that's in the higher level English paper, and
that's
I was like,
that's goals.
Yeah,
for any Irish person.
I was like, I've made it, Mom. It was the weirdest sensation. And then with the fiction book, like I know that's such a step away from all of the like sharing personal content online. But a lot of the subjects I explore on my channel, I was able to explore through fiction. It was still, I still felt like my audience would enjoy it, but it was also appeal, like a lot more creatively fulfilling for me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's not often that I step off and do other things.
Yeah. And so we met, like, so I followed you for the longest time, and we've a friend in common. Riyad is our pal in common, who he's promised me he'll come on the podcast next time he's home in Dublin.
Oh, he is gas. He's been one of my good YouTube friends for a few years, and like I think what we bonded over as well was just that immediate, like, we can talk about anything.
Yes.
And that's what happened with me and you when we were having dinner.
That's exactly what happened
at an event.
Yeah, we literally we happened to be sitting next to each other at a dinner, and I thought, you know, when you go to an event and you're just in and out and in and out, you don't really get to chat to people, because we were having dinner, we were there for a good amount of time.
Yeah.
But immediately, like within about 3.5 minutes, Melanie and I were like, so let's talk about threesomes, remember that time this happened? And then like just straight into like sexuality and all that kind of thing. And I knew then, because you are so passionate about sexual education, that's obviously, that's the whole point of the podcast, so I was straight away like,
perfect fit. I've been so excited about this, because like literally what you're doing right now is just like, when I was doing my degree, which was in teaching, like there was a couple of areas I was interested in going into. One was sex and sexuality and all that, and the other was health and wellness and nutrition and all, and because they're my two big areas of interest, and there's very few people online that will speak as honestly and openly as you do,
particularly Irish people, right?
Oh yeah,
like it just seems to be a bit of a hang up for us, which is why like when you were so open, I was like, this is amazing, and you're just so comfortable talking about it, and I think that comes across in your channel as well. So when I was like, I wanted to, you know, there's lots of things we could do 10 episodes together, but there were so many things I wanted to talk to you about. Like, first and foremost, I think you're my first bisexual guest. I think so, yeah. Well, I mean, I haven't.
Out bisexual guest. A lot of people are like, many mates, and they'll get drunk, and, you know, guys and girls and all, and you know, and they might be married, or they might be, and they'll say, you know, like, I am definitely straight, but, and then they'll talk about certain crushes or certain things they did that they really enjoyed, or and this and that. Yeah. I think a lot of people don't want to use that label, because there's so many people assume like you have to be perfectly 50-50 into men and women and all this, that and the other. And it's, I know a lot more people definitely fall under that umbrella than admit it.
I completely agree. I think it's like, it's a spectrum, isn't it? Like, and you fall somewhere on that spectrum, and like labels really, like, I think, you know, they'll be obsolete in a few years.
Oh, definitely.
Honest.
I hope they are. I hope they are. The only real benefit I see to labels is being able to communicate more about who you are.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, I just feel like it shouldn't be so shocking for, like, so say like there's a pair, like two parents, and their daughter brings a girlfriend home, and they're like, oh, I have this new partner, I can't wait for you to meet them. Mm-hmm. I can't wait till it gets to the point where whoever they bring in to the house, it's just kind of like, oh, how are you? Welcome. And it's not kind of like, it's a girl, you know, like what I just can't wait.
Or then the same set of parents, if the, like, couple of years down the line, having like their daughter having brought home a girl, then brings home a guy.
Yeah.
Like, and it shouldn't be, oh, hang on,
wait a minute,
what's changed? Are you straight now? Like, what's that about?
So
I just thought the way you discussed your own bisexuality, but the topic in general on your YouTube is really it's just really refreshing and really honest and inclusive. So it almost like encourages people to be open about what they are, who they are, how they feel about those sorts of things. And one of the videos in particular that I was really, really interested in was, you've a video called sexual habits you formed in your 20s.
Yes.
That one was really, really good.
Oh, thank you.
And so I'd love to talk about some of the topics that you touched on in that. So we've talked about it before on the podcast.
My favourite topics.
This issue, faking orgasms. So
that was
literally number one on your list.
Mm.
And I've said it so many times. If you ask a room of women to put their hand up if they ever faked an orgasm, 60% of them will put their hands up, and the other 40% are lying.
Yes.
Like, agree. 100%.
Absolutely agree. Because I used to lie. I used to, even two partners, like, and it came, for me, I think it was all born from not even just insecurity, but like, I think having been so sexually informed by porn and stuff like that, I was always putting, because I always grew up like dating fellas, so I was always kind of like, their sexual enjoyment comes before my own, like them coming is the end of sex, like that is what it's all about, and if they've had a good time, that means then I've had a good time because I've lived vicariously through them. It's so stupid. It's mad. And I know, you know, I love a quickie and all that kind of stuff, and I don't feel like I need to have an orgasm to enjoy sex, but I also think like me putting the other person before myself all the time was just so bad for me. Mm-hmm. And it took me so many years to kind of realize just how much I had to relax to actually orgasm with someone, because I, you know, I've been masturbating since I was what, like 11, 10, probably younger, I don't know. Which happened in the bath. My first time was in the bath. I think I was playing with Barbies or something. And because I used to always make my Barbies have sex in the bath. I'll be having gangbangs in the bath. Like, Action Man would join in sometimes. And the other times he'd just watch. And I was like, I used to tell my mates this and they'd look at me like, oh my goodness. And then I had this one friend and she was like the same. So when we'd be alone, she'd be like, I do that too. Or like, you know.
But it was a big secret. Like,
Big secret. And then, but yeah, so with the orgasm stuff, like it was my mid to late 20s that I kind of got to a place where I was kind of like, right, from now on, if it's not happening, I'm just going to say, but I'm not going to make the other person feel all pressured and stuff. Because this is what I'd heard off of friends. I had this one friend in college and she'd always say to me that her and her partner were always fighting after sex, because he'd always feel really like unfulfilled because he couldn't make her have an orgasm. Yeah. And she'd kind of make him feel really guilty. Mm-hmm. And it was this kind of like awful loop. So then they had these negative associations with sex. So then they stopped having sex and it turned into that. So it's kind of like, if I'm not gonna come, I don't want the other person to feel like it's their responsibility. It is my responsibility to show them how to make me come. You know what I mean? And a lot of people don't realize that.
And it's also, you know, important to note, like you said, that's not the end goal. You can still have really enjoyable sex,
my god, yes,
and not have an orgasm. And that's something that you might, that's actually something that you might have to teach your partner, that isn't always the end goal.
And that's, you know, that's one thing when it comes to like same sex sex, like that was a huge learning curve for me. That, you know, I have a friend and he's gay and he doesn't do any kind of anal or anything like that. He calls himself a side, so he doesn't, he's not like a top or a bottom. That's the way they kind of split themselves up. But he's like, I have sex all the time, but I'm not having any kind of like penetrative sex. Well, what does that mean, that I'm not sexually active? No, of course not. So I think the way we define sex has to be, you know, the parameters around that have to be, you have to think about that, because then, you know, sometimes you have such an intense sexual experience and there's no kind of like riding and screaming and banging and all this. You know what I mean? It's just kind of coming to terms with that and just becoming more comfortable with yourself. Because beforehand as well, I was very self-conscious about my body, and that was a big barrier for me to have an orgasm, because I couldn't detach my, I couldn't just let my brain float away and just kind of be in the moment. I was always like, what about, you know, that bit of jiggle? What about that stretch mark? What about, what does he think about that thing and this thing and whatever? And then I think during my first couple of sexual experiences with women, I was kind of, you know, obviously at the beginning, we're both a little bit kind of like realizing how different our bodies are and this, that, and the other. But that made me really realize like, okay, it just had this different effect on me. It was really, really interesting. And that's why I kind of, and to any of my straight friends, like my straight female friends and all, I'm always kind of like, oh, it's just so eye-opening to like just be with a woman. And because they know, because they have a clitoris, they know more of what to do without you having to even say. So it was just a very big learning curve for me.
And you know, the way you said in that video as well, one of the things, it just twigged at me there, because I was looking at the website, Erica Lust's website earlier.
I love her,
Ex Confessions, that one, where all, like, she has all these videos and he says subscribe, and you can subscribe for a year or a month or whatever you want. And there's so many videos. And I saw on YouTube, you were in the background in porn. Like, that is the best thing ever.
The best thing. It's one of the coolest, weirdest things I've done over the past few years. And my friend and I, we got invited out by Erica Lust to see the set, and she was kind of all about, you know, having females like involved in the directing and the behind the camera stuff, and the pay is all equal pay and all that kind of thing. So she wanted to talk to us a lot about making porn for women, you know what I mean, and having that different kind of market and the different, the way it's a lot more about the story and stuff. Because you know the way, like, I talk to girls about, and when they'll be masturbating, they can just kind of think up this big wild story involving their ex or someone they saw that day, or someone they work with or whatever, and you can come just thinking about that. And then, you know, a lot of guys are just more like, you know, they'll look at something or they'll look at a picture or they'll have a video, and it is different. Like, our brains are definitely a little bit different based on, you know, research and how many people I've spoken to about that. But anyway, she just kind of was like, oh, do you just want to just kind of be in a scene? And we were like, what do you mean? And then she said, you know, no, I mean with your clothes on, but just in the background. And when we saw the trailer, we were dying laughing. It was just brilliant, like, to be able to say that.
Interesting experience. Being we watched on a porn set, like.
Yeah, and her porn is quite different in that she lets, it's kind of, she's just capturing sex. She's not directing sex. Yes. She's not like, do this now, move your leg here, there now, make more noise here now, do that again. It does none of that. It was like, they were like, go have fun. And they had a slight storyline in that, like, right at this point, this other couple are going to walk in. And but we were watching it in full, and I'd never seen that in like it. Like, I, you know, I went to like a sex club before and stuff like that, and I've seen strip clubs and all that, but this was very different. It was like outside on a mountain, there was loads of people around them, and they were just full on riding, like, well, they were like real making love, like, and one of the man is married, so we had a big conversation with him on my friend Hannah Witten's channel, and in her video, like, and he was talking about how, like, his wife is so supportive and all that, and it was fascinating.
That is
kind of like,
that
wow.
is fascinating. Like, I that's something that really intrigues me about porn stars and, you know, people who work in porn films.
Yeah,
how their partners must feel about what they do. But then I suppose there's a lot of nuance as well, isn't there, now with like open relationships and fluid kind of situations that people are in. So you never know, like, his wife could think it's really hot and he's porn, you know.
And a lot of them use the word compersion, like, a lot of them, which means like you get pleasure from someone you love experiencing pleasure, kind of thing. And a lot of them don't seem to have an open relationship. They're like monogamous, but obviously they're not monogamous because they're having sex, but they're emotionally monogamous, and they don't, outside of the job aspect, they don't really go off and have partners that they see on the weekend, kind of thing. Because the main thing I always hear about that is like that it gets kind of like, time wise it's very hard to juggle. Because I did try it, and for a while I was kind of like, maybe I am polyamorous, and I was like, no, I'm just dating a lot of people at the same time. It's not the same thing.
There is a fine line there.
And
so you've just gotten engaged. Well, recently enough. How long ago was the summer?
We got engaged, like, officially. We got engaged a few months back, but we got engaged amongst ourselves over a year ago, but he didn't have the money for a ring at the time, so he's training, because he's in a lot of student debt, because he trained up to be a pilot and stuff. So I went away with him while he was studying, and he gave me an onion ring, and like in The Simpsons, because we love The Simpsons, like, we're massive fans of that, and literally to the point that I'm putting, like, you know when Homer goes pour vu and he gives the ring, we're putting that in his wedding ring.
Oh, adorable.
But, it's weird. I went through such a phase of being really, I wouldn't say anti-marriage, but for myself, like, my parents divorced. I know a lot of people who, you know, they'll break up. I was with someone for 6 years. That didn't work out. And all this. But I don't know. I got to a point where I was just kind of like, right now, I'm with someone who, I've never been this happy with someone. Yeah. I've known him for 12 years, 11 years as a mate. Like, and I always fancied him, and then he always fancied me. But I was with someone when we met. Then when we broke up, he was with someone. And that just kept fucking happening. I was like, right, oh my God, finally my chance. And I'm just really happy with it. And I'm just kind of like, you know, if stuff happens, it happens. Yeah. But I don't want that to stop me living my life.
Yeah.
And I always did love, when I was younger, I loved the idea of being so committed to someone that you can stand up in front of all your family and friends and celebrate that.
That's a really lovely thing.
And I know people divorce, but like, Jesus, it's actually happening less now, which is cool. Because people are waiting until they're older.
Yeah.
And I'm glad. I know I'm quite, like, I'm 30. And, you know, back in my ma's day, they'd kind of get married in their early 20s. Yeah. But I was not in any place to be doing that like that then.
No. I remember my parents got married, I think they were 25 and 26. And that was late. That they were, like, all of their cousins and were married already at, like, 20, 21. Like, I didn't know my arse from my elbow when I was 21. I really didn't, looking back, you know. Although I thought I did, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And so you're monogamous now with your fiancé. And how does he feel about your openness online about sex and all that kind of thing and about your past. Because, I mean, my husband doesn't even know about my sexual past, never mind the internet and him.
Oh, yeah.
So how does he kind of feel about that and deal with that?
That's actually a really interesting question because, so obviously, he knew me long before I had a YouTube channel. Okay. And I was always quite, not mouthy, what's the word? I was always quite loose-lipped about those kinds of things. Yeah. You know, especially after a few
drinks with mates.
I would always talk about that kind of stuff. So he always knew me and knew what I was like. But the thing is with the internet as well, like I only started talking about sexuality after I had, you know, Stephen Byrne?
Yes.
So we had a pint or something like that and it was coming up to the marriage equality referendum. And I think there was some bar girl or something. And I was like just commenting on her and I was single at the time and I wasn't single. I can still comment on people, okay, when I'm with someone. Me and Thomas do that all the time and we'll often notice the same girl and kind of look at each other and have a little giggle or whatever. It's nice. But
that's
fine.
Just because you're in a relationship doesn't mean you can't appreciate.
I always fancy people, you know what I mean? And especially like famous people or people in films or shows, I'm always going on about
them. You can't expect that to switch off just because you're in a relationship. That's,
exactly.
That's not what it's about. Anyway.
Tangent. But I commented on this woman and he said he was kind of like, are you bisexual and all, and we were having a chat and he was just like, how come you don't talk about this online? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm with someone, and he was like, so
yeah.
And I think that because all my life, and I even tweeted about this today because it's Bi Visibility Day today.
What good timing.
I know, it's me, I'm not a ghost.
I planned that was 100% planned. For anyone listening, I planned that. Okay.
But my first boyfriend said, like, I remember he was really like, but we're together, like you're committed to me, so if you're going around saying that you're bisexual or you're still adamant that you're bisexual, that means that I'm not enough for you, and that means that, like, that makes me feel like shit. And he couldn't see that your sexual orientation has nothing to do with your relationship status.
Yeah.
Because like single people are not asexual because they're not with someone. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's nothing to do with your sexuality. Like the way, you know, there's gay priests. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. They never marry. They never, you know, be with anyone.
Yeah.
And it was just really hard to get that through to him. But anyway, with Stephen, I was having this conversation and he was kind of like, you know, you could really use your platform to inspire people to go out and vote. And it's a really important vote, obviously. And I was just kind of thinking like, yeah, why don't I talk about this stuff? And this was before like any of the big YouTubers, like even Shane Dawson, none of them were out. Like, no, it was apart from the ones who were very, you know, in your face about, you know, like their sexuality and stuff like that. But, you know, here's my boyfriend, you know, guy, unless they were really like that, no one really made videos about it at the time.
Okay.
I think it was like 2014 or 15 or something like that. And I didn't know how to go about it because there wasn't like reference videos, especially by women, especially like bisexual women. Mm-hmm. There was in the media talk of bisexuality, but it was always like the media arguing about whether or not someone was bisexual. Like, say, Angelina Jolie, I remember she had a girlfriend and then they were like, oh, but now she's married to Brad Pitt. So like, what is she? And it was all this like, you know, analysing and tearing
and
people apart.
Misunderstanding. Like, there's so much misunderstanding.
And especially like with men, like if a man ever talks about bisexuality, they're like, he's just gay. Like, he's gay. I have two male friends who are bisexual and they're both YouTubers and like they barely ever talk about it online, and they always tend to go out with girls, and we've had talks about that. It's kind of like there's so much heteronormativity that you're grown up with that you don't almost don't know how to model, like on dates with girls. I'd be like, oh, I better pull out her chair, or like, you know, I put my arm around her. It's like one of us had to be the man. Like, I was like, I don't know how to do that because I don't see it in films. I don't see it in my life.
It's not represented.
And and it did really affect a lot of my choices, definitely. Anyway, where am I going with this? Me and Stephen chatting, and that made me kind of be like, right, I should do some video to make people vote. Mm-hmm. So I made a video called How to Come Out, and it wasn't necessarily all about me or anything like that. It was me and Riyadh, our friend, and James Mitchell. He does the Try Channel stuff. And is this Try Channel? Yeah, I think it's the Try Channel. But the three of us were kind of just sat on my bed making this structured video, kind of like a tutorial on how to come out. And it was all very basic. It was like, find one person, and once you tell that one person, I'll... and after that, I got so many people being like, can you make a video about this thing? Can you make a video about this and this and this, all about bisexuality? And it almost accidentally became part of my online thing. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Because there was obviously a hunger for it then. People were getting onto you straight away, being like, do more of this, more of this.
And like private emails where they were sending me their life story and all. And so like with Thomas, like Thomas was there through this whole kind of... through all of that, and
Thomas is your fiance,
my fiance, so I'm circling back, you see, I remembered. But he just never had any opinion on it, really. So when we got together, he never brought it up, he never dug, asked questions, said, why do you do this, or, you know, ever, nothing, no mention of it. If I ever said I'm filming today, he'd be like, oh, what are you filming? And I'd say to him, and he'd be like, oh, cool, you know, I'm doing a Q&A about bisexuality, or I'm doing this, or I'm doing that. He'd always be like, oh, cool. And he'd always watch it, and just, he's just really loving and supportive, and he knows it's part of what I do, because
that's amazing that you have that in him. Like, and I even, he's obviously very secure, and
You
know,
he doesn't give a shit what people think about him. Like, amazing. I think it's, and he says it himself, like he said it in my video, so I don't mind saying it here, but he got really badly bullied in school, so that gave him a very thick skin. And like, people have commented on my videos before, you know, they'll slag his dress sense, or they'll be like, he's gay, he's closeted, he's gay, you're a beard, and he just doesn't care. Like, everything just goes right over his head. Like,
that's amazing.
He's the most incredible, like, it's like he's this impenetrable suit on, and someone could be up in his face saying all sorts of stuff, and he's just looking at them, and he just like, right, I'll see you later. Like, he just doesn't care, and I admire that so much, and it's really rubbed off on me. Okay. Because in the past, stuff people, like, people's opinions of me would get to me more in the past, like if people misunderstood me or whatever. And now the only time I ever get like kind of real self-aware is if I do fuck up or miscommunicate or whatever, and you know, obviously, but me as a person or anything like that, like the way I talk, the way I look, if people say shit about that, I'm like, fuck off,
you don't care anymore.
But Thomas is, he's amazing. We made a video about what he thinks about my sexuality, or like, does it threaten him and all this. And he did admit one time, and I don't mind saying this, he did admit one time, we were having a really long conversation, and he did say he would be more, in terms of like our lifetime together, he would be more, he would have more feelings of not insecurity, but like, not inadequacy, I don't know the right word.
Unease
about like the idea of me, feeling like he can't fulfill something that I might want to seek from a woman, because he knows the way I work. I think the reason I don't use the label pansexual is because gender definitely does inform my attractions. So like, the type of guys and the type of girls I often go for, I like those kind of real hyper mask, hyper femme kind of, you know?
Yes, okay.
And my most significant relationship with a girl was 3 months.
Okay.
And, you know, and that, so that's a big point of reference for me when talking to him. And, you know, what I did get from that sexual experience and from that dating experience was very different from what I do get with him.
Mm-hmm.
Even though at the core of it, it is just you and another person.
Yeah.
But there's definitely a different feeling around it based on, you know, women. We have menstrual cycles. We have different ways of,
there's a completely expressing. Different dynamic between two girls and two a guy and a girl.
And I think like there's a slight element of kind of like him worrying that I might at one point kind of be like, oh, you know, I'm not getting that here. Whereas he's just like, I would never have that with other fellas, because he's so secure in himself as a man, and he knows that like he does so much to ensure that our relationship is great, and stuff like that. So there's, you know, there's the tiny bit of that obviously maybe in the back of his head, which in fairness, if I, even though I'm bisexual myself, if I was with, say, a girl who's bi or a guy who's bi, I might always have that thing of like, I'm a girl and you're also attracted to men. And, you know, but that all comes down to like comparing yourself to people and thinking like you're not enough for someone. And I think it's that's something you just have to work on in any relationship.
Yeah. Oh, completely.
Think about all the girls you probably have met, you know, like I grew up obviously like, you know, and hanging out in these groups of girls, and they'd always be kind of going on about like, oh, he's more into blondes, he's more into girls who are tan, he's more into skinny girls, he's more into this. You know, everyone experiences that to an extent.
Yeah. And like I always say, whether it's in romantic relationships, in friendships, whatever, you're never ever going to get everything that you could ever possibly want from one person.
Absolutely.
You're not ever. That's just a fact.
Yeah.
But the thing is, with a monogamous relationship, you make the choice to deal with that yourself.
Yeah.
So you make the choice to say, I'm going to commit to this person. And whether they can give me 100% of what I need or not, that's it's my decision to commit and to be monogamous.
Yeah.
And then everything else that I need, I can find in a non-sexual, non-romantic way.
But that's it. Because say with that, for an example, if I was like having a moment where I was just really only sexually drawn to women, I would just watch a ton of porn and I'd maybe watch it with him, and we can explore it in ways where, like, you know, sometimes I will ask him to like talk about a certain girl while we're doing stuff and to kind of fulfill, so I can like imagine things while me and him are doing stuff, like we can bring it in different ways. And I think like that, I was talking about that actually with a mate recently, that whole like where your partner shouldn't ever try and juggle everything. Like they're not your therapist, they're not your this, they're not your that.
Yeah.
But me and him, for example, films. Like I'm mad into films, and he's just doesn't really care all that much. Like he'll watch one, and then afterwards I want to talk about it for like 5 hours, and he's just like, oh yeah, it was all right. Anyway, let's go to gym. It's just so different in that way. And I get a lot of, you know, like the kind of more like deep philosophical kind of conversations, like I'll have them with like my dad or like certain mates that me and him just don't talk about that stuff.
I have a similar buzz with my husband when it comes to music. So I love music. I used to play music. It's a constant in my life the whole time. I love picking apart different, like, you know, vocals, and I love watching YouTube videos about different voices or different instruments, and I love going to see live orchestras play.
Oh,
and
I love a live orchestra.
Every kind of music. I love classical, I love hip hop, I love everything. And I feel really, really passionately about it, to the point where I listen to songs over and over and over. Anyway, my husband, he likes music as much as the next person, but it's never been a massive passion of his.
Yeah.
And so if I need to have a really, really like
music nerd chat,
really music nerdy chat, I know who else to go to for that, and it's with one of my friends or my dad or whoever it is. But I, you know, that was never going to be a reason for me to go, actually, do you know what?
You're not the one.
Like, you can't give me my music chat, and that's really important to me. No. Because what he does give me is so much more than that, and it's so much the bigger picture. And so I think it's always worth remembering that, in, you know, like, whether you down the line find yourself attracted to a girl or a guy or whoever, you've made the choice to be monogamous. You've made a choice to commit. Yeah. So no matter what comes along,
sure, I am going to find other people attractive. Absolutely. And he will as well. Yeah, and it's kind of, I get a bit like, when, you know, when I'm talking to people and they're like, oh no, not my partner, they're not allowed to look at anyone, or it does make me feel a little bit kind of uncomfortable, and it's so restrictive, and it's so, like, that's not how human brains work.
It's a bit insecure to me, like, you know, because if there was an attractive woman and my husband was like looking at her or whatever, or thinking about her, like, that's none of my business. With the best will in the world, it's none of my business.
It doesn't reflect on you.
It doesn't
reflect on his feelings for you. Anything like that. And I think that's something that, like, it almost, you know, when you're young and people are like, oh, one day you'll understand, or like you'll become more wise as you grow, and I'd be like, shut the fuck up, like, you know. But I do think getting older has made me a lot more comfortable with that fact, and has made me understand that that your relationship with someone doesn't, you know, what they do or don't have with other people has nothing to do with this little bubble that you and him or have you created, and her, or you and whoever have together. And it's so nice. It's just so nice to just trust the other person as well, and just kind of be able to be honest about those things.
And trust and honesty, once they're there, everything else is, you know, it doesn't, you don't have to both be able to talk about film or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I noticed one of your videos, and sometimes I feel that way about this podcast a little bit. You said at the start of it, I think, what was the video called? I think it was called Masturbation, Porn and Vibrators or something like that. And at the start of the video, you were like, family, turn off now. You don't need to look at this video. And I said that at the top of the very first episode of Private Education. I said, Thanks so much for the support, Mam and Dad, but you don't need to listen to any episode. Just press play and then put it on mute. And that is what they do.
Yeah.
What is your family's reaction to your that aspect of your YouTube life?
I think if they have really strong opinions on it, they've not shared them with me. And okay. I'm kind of glad. Like, you know, I did give them a bit of a heads up when I kind of realized that I could talk about this stuff online. It took me going to like UK conventions and stuff and meeting other people who were making sex education content and all that to realize like, oh my God, that's so interesting. That's so fun. Like, why am I pigeonholing myself? Like, I can talk about anything. Mm-hmm. I can talk about anything online. And, you know, it does affect your growth, your views, because you get demonetized. Like, YouTube doesn't really push that kind of stuff, you know, because it's more sensitive. It's not family friendly, fluffy, fun, but it's so much more impactful. And the people who do watch it are way more like, yes, this is great, rather than, you know. But so I told them and I kind of gave them a bit of a heads up. I did say this, you know, if I ever make a video and it has this kind of title or whatever, just like, I'd prefer if you just kind of didn't watch that. But I do think, you know, say more distant family, like not like immediate family, but more distant family, I definitely have like stuff has gotten back to me of stuff that's been said, you know, judging like why I would talk about it or like, you know, that kind of thing. And that kind of makes me realize that, like that video that might have 200,000 views, I'm like, 200,000 people have seen that video and cast judgments on it, on the content, on why it was made and all this, that, and I just kind of have to not care about it. Like, I have to just blank that out, because otherwise I wouldn't make what I want to make.
Yeah.
It's kind of like with creativity. It's like, if you want to, you know, write something with my novel, if I cared too much about what other people's opinions of it were, I would never finish it. I wouldn't share it, because I would be crippled by the idea of someone else not liking it. And I saw a podcast, or I listened to a podcast recently with Ricky Gervais, and he was kind of talking about that, and he was just kind of like, if you're making something, focus on the people that it's being made for. They're the only people that matter at the end of the day, because, like, you know, otherwise you just never do anything or share anything. So it is a difficult one, though, you know. And I get a lot of questions from people who are from very religious families and stuff, and they're kind of like, how do I be authentic and be myself and explore all this and that and the other, or live openly, you know. If I had a trans viewer recently say to me, like, they were like, I can't live my life as me because of my parents and this and the other. And it is so heartbreaking, because I think just once you're an adult and you're kind of out of being under their thumb, like, you kind of have to draw a line somewhere and be like, right, this is what I want to do.
And just respect their, you know, their wishes to a certain extent, but still completely do you. So there was a couple more things in your habits formed in 20 when you're in your 20s video that I wanted to ask about. So one thing I think I want to buy a billboard and put this on. Girls, after you have penetrative sex, go to the toilet,
go for a piss, a nice piss.
And go to the toilet, because, like, literally, I remember, like, years and years ago, I was somewhere at work, and a girl that I worked with had started seeing a new guy, and she went away for the weekend with him. She came back and she went to the doctor, and she had a UTI, urinary tract infection, for anyone who doesn't know. And it was obviously because she'd spent the weekend having loads of rides with this new guy. And then she came home from the doctor, and she said, her dad said, you know, what's wrong? And she said, I've got a UTI. And she didn't realize that it was very, very much linked to sex. But I occasionally have gotten UTIs in the past, and since I started, immediately after the penetrative sex
it just stops.
Go to the bathroom straight away, have a nice wipe front to back. And then you'll be fine. And it really, 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 really cuts them back.
Oh,
and
it makes such a difference.
When you said that in that video, I was like, yes. Well done.
It is one of those things that I thought it was an old wives' tale. And I was kind of like,
so
right.
True, though.
And I get it. You know, the way our anatomy is, it's just shocking. Like, who designed down there? Like, fuck's sake. But I know some people's might be, you know, things might be close together, it might be harder, it might be, they might be more prone to it, if especially if, like, they don't keep their back passage very clean.
Yeah.
But you know, I used to be so stupid. Like when I was a teenager, I would have anal sex and then straight away I would have vaginal sex. Like yeah. take it out, put it in each one or the other, because you know we'd see it in porn and we'd be like, oh, that looks great.
We can do that.
Yeah. And then I'd be crippled with like burning cystitis for like, you know, to the point that like I couldn't get off the toilet. Yeah. I'd be on the toilet all day, not even going, just little driplets getting through. It's agony, like.
Yeah.
And
yet feeling like you need to pee all the time,
all day. And it's painful. Just when you learn, this is why I'm kind of like, why is there not a module in school that's about sex and relationships from the age, you know, from when you're really young right the way through? Because mm-hmm. there's so much that benefits your day-to-day life if you just learn it. You shouldn't have to learn it by going through
it. This is why when I saw that I was like, okay, that's like at least 500,000 people right after they have sex. Like, it's just, this is the thing, you know. That's why I your comfort, and even, you know, the fact that just there you were like, when I was a teenager and I'd have anal sex, then I'd have, you know, vaginal sex straight away after. And the fact that, you know, you can even say sentence that, without, you know, freaking out or tensing up or your face going red, like, that's,
but to me,
that's,
do you know,
so
what?
Different.
The way I think about it is kind of like the way we can just sit there and so openly be like, so I had some pasta and then I had, you know, a bit of pizza. And it's just a thing you're doing. With
and
your
it literally
body.
Is a thing that everyone is doing.
Everyone
like, okay,
deals.
I don't mean that everyone is
having anal sex.
I don't mean that.
I don't even like it anymore. I used to do it. I think I used to do it just because the lad I was with liked doing it. And I, you know, it wasn't terrible. I just wasn't necessarily getting much out of it. And it was more of a, you know, oh, let's have like a dirty ride today or whatever. But in general, I would never just be like, oh, I'm really in the mood for that. So I just don't do it anymore.
I'm the same. It's never been good.
On the menu.
It's never been good. It just, if it was good, I'd be all about it.
Yeah.
Like, it's not the,
we don't have a G-spot up there. Like, you know, we don't have the prostate thing. No. But even like loads of guys don't like that. Like, you know, I know a lot of guys do like it, but you know, it's even with that added, like, it's just a strange sensation. Like, it's been described to me as, you know, having a shit backwards. It's just it's like the shit coming back all the way up. But it's just, like, if you like it though, you know, I would never kink shame anyone.
No,
but just personally, it's not that.
Yeah.
That's great.
And so, another thing that you had, which is why I was looking at Erica Lust and how I got it onto her website and everything, is in that video you also said one of the things, the good sexual habits you formed in your 20s was to watch better porn. So talk to me about this, because for me, the porn I watch is generally, like you said, it's like the fast food of porn. If I want to watch porn, it's generally because I don't have time to have the ride. I don't have time to spend half an hour even masturbating. I literally have to get in,
two minutes,
all I want is an
the
orgasm.
The best vibrator in the drawer, right?
Yeah, the really good one. And it is very much a case of put something in front of me so this speeds up the process.
The process,
That's all it is for me. And generally, that's the only time I really watch porn. And I'm happy, like I'm happy for my husband to watch it.
I make a big sesh out of it.
Yeah, I have done in the past. On occasion. Particularly when I was single, I remember I was seeing a guy and we were remotely both watching porn and it would go on for hours and we, you know.
Yeah.
But like, definitely not anymore. It's more just a functional thing.
Yes.
So, but what you were saying was, you know, when you want to watch like quote unquote decent porn, what is that? What is that to you and what does that mean to you?
The main thing like that I feel now, if I click into Pornhub or whatever now, I don't know when this started or like what conversation was had that made me aware of this. About, it was some quote that it was some talk I was at or something where they talked about how much revenge porn is online and how many videos, you know, you'll be watching a video and like one thing that I always really loved watching and I still love like watching it is like just a girl masturbating and it's really up close so you can see the orgasm on camera, like in really great detail with like lovely audio and all this, like just those kind of real homemade videos. And finding out that a lot of them are private videos those girls have sent to their partner or their, you know, someone that they were just shagging
or an ex
or whatever, and then they put it up. And the whole revenge porn thing is, some, not with our generation necessarily, but like with younger people. And you know, a lot of the people the girls that would be in those videos. So I kind of feel like I'm way more conscious of what I'm watching now. So I always try and see, like, is it like people who consistently upload, like, are they purposefully making this for the internet, and, like, is, you know, that kind of thing, because I don't like stuff that's too overproduced or like fake, and I like seeing more diversity and stuff like that. So I think with porn, the way it negatively affected me, first of all, I did go through a bit of an addiction with porn. Like, I couldn't orgasm without it, and I was watching it multiple times a day, and so I had to give it up for a while in order
when
to
when would this have been, what age would
years
you
ago like okay. I think I was in my early 20s maybe or a long time ago, but it became this and I don't necessarily have like a super addictive personality, but I've been addicted to a few things, and I think this one was quite difficult because it was the stuff I was watching as well. It was all the same. It was all kind of like, you know, boob jobs, and they all looked a certain way. I was really comparing myself to what I was watching. It was affecting my sex life because I was trying to emulate what I was seeing, and that kind of thing. And I guess, you know, you can't really shame people for like watching a certain type of porn, but I think it's really good to try and like a broaden like what you're watching, like consuming different types of stuff, and kind of making sure the source, like, that would be more than that, and it's like the source of it
is good.
Because I just get such a sinking awful feeling of like, if I was watching something and then I found out it was like the guy's little sister down the road, and it went up without her consent, and they were down the guards about it, and not because I've heard stories like this, and a lot of my audience messaged me going like, oh, there's these, I sent this picture to this guy and now it's going all around school and now it's online, and what do I do? And they're like, I can't tell my parents because as soon as my parents, then they'll have to see it. And it's horrible. Like, it's actually awful. I can't imagine that happening to me. Like, I think, but then when you look at it though, you know, what's her face? The biggest paid actress in Hollywood is Jennifer Lawrence.
Oh yes.
Yeah. And all of her nudes got leaked. Like, you know, and she kind of just got to a point where she was like, right, they're out there now, fuck it, I'm going to still work, and like, fuck you if you look at it.
And in so a way, that's kind of not the best way to handle it, isn't it? Like, just to be like, obviously not everyone's going to be able to do that. Not everyone is Jennifer Lawrence. But at the same time, you know, like, anything, I would always say, anything that I've ever sent to anyone or filmed or whatever is something that I would be happy to have online, because absolutely not, but it's something that if it did end up online, I'd be like, you know what, that's me,
that's the way fine. I go about it now as well. I'm very careful with like the types of stuff, because, you know, obviously I was my fiance and I about I think the first year of our relationship was long distance, so I was going over and back to Spain a lot, and so a lot of our sex life was videos we would make for each other, and, you know, Skype and phone calls and all this kind of stuff, but you know, even still I was kind of quite careful with what I would say in them, and that kind of thing, because, you know, I have certain kinks that I just wouldn't want anyone to know other than my partner, and that kind of thing. So it is just about, especially if you're, oh my God, if you're listening and you're under 18, don't put your face in pictures. It's child pornography. Yeah. Like, don't, please don't.
Or any identifying tattoos or birthmarks.
Stick a bit of sellotape on them.
Yeah, just cover them up. Put makeup on them. Yeah, do whatever you have to do. And so you were saying as well, you had sort of a porn addiction. Mm. How did you get yourself out of that, I suppose?
I had to go cold turkey with it for, I think it was like 6 months. What I did is how I did it first, was to just completely give it up. And after that, when I said I could, when I told myself like, right, you know, if I can stay off of it for that amount of time. Now, like, at the time as well, I did kind of want to stop using a vibrator as well, because I thought I didn't know how to come anymore with my hand. I was like, God, I've become really out of touch with myself completely and all this. But I didn't do that. I never stopped using vibrators. But I just tried more regularly without a vibrator. But no, it was brilliant for me. It was really good to just know that I wasn't broken, because I thought I would never have an orgasm with someone unless there was a video playing in the corner of the room, do you know what I mean? And I didn't want the idea of me being married to someone and then us having sex with my eye kind of like looking off to the corner and at a video and not being able to just be in that moment with them and that kind of thing. I just didn't want that. even though, like, you know, I still watch porn like multiple times a week. Like, I probably watch it more than the average person, but, you know, I don't think it's detrimental to my life anymore. Whereas the reason I decided to, like, go 6 months without it was because I was kind of revolving my days around what times would I be free and alone that I can do this, and, like, then if I wasn't able to do it, I would get really frustrated and irritable, and and it was affecting, like, my actual sex life.
Okay.
So that's when, and that often, it does often happen to fellas, but it happens to girls as well. And I think, like, a lot of us don't really talk about it, how, like, that visual stimulus can make real life sex not as sexy, yes, if that makes sense. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
And so you said as well there a second ago that you have kinks that you aren't comfortable sharing with the world.
Yeah.
So obviously I'm not going to ask you. So what are they? Please tell me. No, of course not. But it's where is the line for you? As in, because you're so open on your YouTube and, you know, on social and stuff, you answer you've answered so many questions for people. People ask you all sorts of things. You're really, really open, really confident, self-assured about that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So what is it that, where's the line?
What is that
makes you want to keep certain parts of it to yourself?
I think, so there's two parts of that answer. So, like, one part of it is that because I share so much, I need to keep a certain amount back so that I feel like, you know, my life isn't the internet. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of things that I wouldn't put, for example, in my monthly vlogs.
Yes.
A lot of people in my life, a lot of hobbies, a lot of certain things like that. And I'm kind of like, you know, I have to have some stuff for me. That's not for, you know, everyone. And then the second thing would be, I think what helps me decide is that, like, I'm like, if I'm sharing this thing, what is or isn't educational about it? Like, or what is or isn't going to actually help someone else? Because, like, my personal kinks and stuff like that, I don't think by me sharing those, like, maybe it might, you know, someone might hear that and be like, oh, I have that kink too, now I feel like it's less weird. But I don't want to take on that job. Like, I feel like what I share is kind of like kind of the developmental stuff, like, you know, when you're first learning about this and that and the other. Like, I'll talk about my first period, or, you know, like, the time, well, there's, I don't know, then as well, if it involves anyone else. So if it involves
someone else,
so by me, say, talking about a certain kink, then I'm automatically talking about me and my partner, or other people I've had sex with.
I get you. And so to be respectful to everyone.
To everyone else. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And because obviously, like, if I have a certain kink, it's likely that the other person has it as well. Mm-hmm. If we're in a sex life.
So it would be difficult if they didn't.
In some
instances, I can imagine.
Yeah. There's some things I'm kind of into that Thomas just is not into.
Okay.
And that is kind of, I don't know, it's weird because at the start I was kind of like, oh God, I really miss that thing. But I don't, because I figure out how to, like, you know, obviously I'll just watch porn of that or stuff on my own. So I still have, you still have a solo
There's
sex
still
life.
An outlet, like, yeah. And it's interesting, like, that solo sex life, you've got, it's almost like everyone has two sex lives in a way. You have the one that you explore by yourself, and then you have the one with your partner. Do you find?
Yeah, and I think that's really healthy as well. Like, all the stuff that you do on your own, all the stuff you think about, can benefit and improve your sex life with your partner. And then, you know, even like all the time I was single and all of the sexual experiences I had during that, like, I do feel like all of that, you know, kind of added to, you know, my current partner gets to benefit from all of that as well. Yeah. So it is just interesting looking at all these different avenues of someone's sex life and how that kind of changes over time and stuff.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
And one of the things that a lot of people message me and say, for, you know, on private education or on my own Instagram or wherever, is that, you know, how did I come to be so comfortable talking about this sort of thing?
Yeah.
And I actually can't answer that because I don't know. And I just want to know from you, like, you and I, we're both from relatively small towns, North County, Dublin. Like, we're just... I would consider myself normal, like, you're completely normal. Like, there's nothing special about me. It's not that I had any specific training in the area or any specific, like, my parents, I was raised Catholic.
Same.
My parents are really conservative, very normal parents. Yeah. You know, I never know how to explain the comfort level that I have talking about this sort of thing. I'm just grateful that I have it because it, I think, opens the door for other
people
to talk about it.
Did you always have, like, friends that were the same? Like, do you think your friendship circles that you developed over life, like, do you think that ever...
Do you know, I actually think it was the opposite in a way, because...
I would have been
yeah, I would have been the person that was just... I have always just thought about it as another aspect of life.
Of life,
and another,
yeah.
And a thing that everyone is doing, and we all go through these experiences, and it's exactly the same as, you know, whether it's like you're, you know, getting your period or going to college or moving out for the first time,
yeah.
Like having sex for the first time, having anal sex for the first time. It's all just part of the experience of life.
Yeah.
So in terms of my friend groups, I definitely would have been the one that people... Now, that's not to say that my friends are all real prudish and don't talk about it, but it's just I probably would have been the person to give that advice, or the person that was more comfortable, shall we say, than anybody else. So do you have any insight, just finally, like, what do you think made you feel this comfortable talking about these things?
So privately, I don't know. I'd be the same as you. Like, privately, I have no idea how my mindset became that, like, oh, well, this is just a thing that happens. I think part of it was that I just really enjoyed talking about that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I got way more excited talking about, you know, what we did in bed last night versus, I don't know, a soap opera, you know, with my mates. So that I don't know how to explain. But publicly, I know all of this started with a video I made about acne, and it was my first viral video, and it was the first time I got any kind of an audience. And it was because I was sharing something that previously I'd always kept really private, and like I'd always covered up I'd put so much layers of makeup on before school. God, like I would wake up way before school to put on fuck tons of makeup, and then I would straighten my hair and I put it like this so like no one could see my skin. And then when I got really into YouTube, I found this one girl called Cassandra Bankson, and she used to make these acne tutorials, and I loved watching them. Like, I'd watch them over and over and over again, not because I was copying her makeup, because oh my god, she has acne and she's showing it up close. Because the only picture I'd seen of a celebrity with acne before that video was Cameron Diaz, and it was like really far taken away, and I just didn't ever see that, and it was amazing to me to see that. So I remember then I got this massive breakout. I was taking whey powder because it was like I'm lactose intolerant, but like I was taking it when I was going to the gym. I was like, yeah, like protein powder. And I got this enormous breakout all over my face, and I was in my 20s, and I was like, for feck's sake. And I'd already been started making YouTube videos at this point, and I remember thinking, like, no one was watching them though, so I was kind of like, oh, like I could make a video like the one she made, and I modeled it off of hers. Do you know what I mean? And but I, you know, all the keywords were like all to do with acne, and I was convinced the only people that would see it would be people with acne.
Yes.
And then it got loads and loads and loads of views, and YouTube had this homepage at the time, and they put it there, and then it was just getting shared on The Sun and all this and the other, and then all these people were seeing it, and they were saying all sorts of things like, take a bitch to the pool on the first date, and oh my god, can you imagine waking up next to that, and horrible things. But then there was also so many people being like, thank you so much, and that way outweighed all those arseholes.
Mm-hmm.
But honest to God, like after that video went out, I remember waking up one day, and it was at a few million views at this point, and I was kind of like doing my makeup, and I was like, everyone has seen my face. Like, I'm not embarrassed of this anymore. Like, I don't really need to wear makeup. Like, yeah, I like wearing it, but I don't need it. And that affected every part of my life, because then I was kind of like, if people know something about me, the world's not going to end.
Yes,
do you know what I mean? Yeah. And I kind of realized, like, my passion for education and my passion for sex and relationships and stuff like that, I was kind of like, why can't I just combine them?
Yeah.
I don't care what people think about what I say. Like, the people who benefit from it and like it will like it, and I have to concentrate on those.
Yeah.
And the people who don't get it or think it's weird or whatever, they don't matter.
Yeah.
So that changed my life. Like, it was crazy.
Yeah. Well, I think I speak for myself, and I'm sure, like, literally hundreds of thousands of other people, when I say it's appreciated. Like, I really think it needs to happen more. People need to be comfortable talking about it, you know. It is a fact of life. It's not going away. It's not something that people will all of a sudden stop doing. We're not all just going to stop having sex one day. We're not going to stop having relationships, romantic or otherwise. And so I just think it's and whatever it is about you, I think maybe it's the, like, Irishness, or maybe it's just you come across so open and so warm, and it's almost like you have an instant trust with the viewer, like, you know.
Yeah.
Which is something that
I'm glad of that.
This is it.
That's
like,
nice.
That's
to
what
hear.
I want to kind of I want to get that into podcast world. I'm, yeah. You know, that's
oh, you definitely have that as well. I think that's why we got on so well immediately, because yeah. People who aren't like that, I find it hard to click with them. And that's why, like, a lot of my mates, if I look at my circle of mates, they're all so different from each other, but they all have that one quality that's just this immediate comfort to say anything.
Yes, yeah, I feel the same way about my pals actually. So yeah, we've covered a lot in an hour, and we could go on and on, couldn't we? Really?
Yeah. She'll let her know if you want me back. I could always do a future episode.
I can safely say I would do want you back at some point. We could do. There's all sorts we could do. But thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I love podcasts. I'm getting so into them lately.
God, yeah. Hopefully everyone will. Yeah. So tell your pals about podcasts, people. Yeah. Specifically this one. But Melanie Murphy, if anyone wants to find you on YouTube, they can just search Melanie Murphy.
My name, yeah.
Likewise on Instagram, but you've got two eyes in your Melanie.
Two eyes on Instagram. Yeah. Some bitch stole my name. And on Twitter I'm Melanie Tweets, and that has two eyes as well.
Okay,
but if you type in my name, they just all come up, and they're all linked on my YouTube channel as well.
Cool. And your book, If Only, is out now as well. Your fiction
it is
book
and is lots about relationships and that, not so much about sex, but wait for my next novel. More sexy time than that.
Exclusive. Fantastic. Yeah. I love it. Okay, so thank you so much. Thanks, Cassie. And Scout is in the corner in her little bed. As per usual. She's so cute. Okay, thanks everybody for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and thanks so much for all the lovely feedback on the last couple, actually, with Niamh Cooney. We were talking about pregnancy sex and postpartum sex and sex with kids and all that kind of stuff. And I had so many mams, dads, step parents, all sorts getting on to me to say thank you. And, you know, and actually a girl who was pregnant, or is, sorry, she still is pregnant. I think she's like 25 weeks pregnant or something. And she got on to me and said that listening to the episodes with Niamh have made her feel less terrified about the prospect of giving birth. Which I'm delighted about. So thanks so much everyone for the feedback, and as always, if you fancy it, sure, lash a review up on the internet somewhere. I'd really appreciate it. And until next week, thanks so much for listening. Stay safe, have fun. Bye.